Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hey, friends, it's me again. You know what's really easy to do and even easier to forget? Help me out and hit that like button if you're listening on YouTube. If you're listening somewhere else, what the hell? Pop in and give me a thumb. Say hi while you're at it. Helps me a ton with that damn algorithm. And besides, it's always nice to see you there. All right, then. Let's hop on that crazy train.
All aboard!
Welcome, friend. You know, just when you think the holiday season is over, here comes another one. It's National Word Nerd Day, a day when we celebrate those that revel in their expansive vocabularies, those that string together words for all our enjoyment, and even those that annoy us with constant grammar corrections. Who annoy us with grammar corrections? Thanks, Chester. If it wasn't National Word Nerd Day, I'd smack you for that one. Anyway, let's head on in, friend. This holiday is already starting to annoy me. All right. So check out simplyscarypodcast.com and click the Patrons Area button. You get the entire catalog ad-free and available to download or stream for as little as $8 a month. Or is that as few as $8 a month? Damn it! Oh, and you can always drop a few dollars at patreon.com/DrewBlood if you'd like. If you'd like me to go on living, that is. No pressure, though. So tonight we welcome back our old pal and one of our favorite word nerds, Frederick Pangborn. Sadly, Fred is no longer with us, but his brother Robert Pangborn has been kind enough to help us keep Fred's legacy alive. And as long as we're here, he will be too. In this one, Police Chief Ed Byrne investigates a brutal attack at a frozen Wisconsin lake. So, without further delay, from author Frederick Pangborn, I give you Beneath the Ice. Felix bounced the wax worm at the end of his jigging rod a few more times and waited. The cold Wisconsin wind outside the portable shanty had picked up slightly, pushing the isolated material inward. He was glad he had secured a couple of extra ice anchors into the lake's thick frozen surface. He looked down to the stainless steel thermos of hot coffee, then back to the 10-inch hole that the auger had drilled at his feet. The ice was a good 6 inches thick. He again bounced his jig that dangled at the end of his line somewhere beneath the ice at his feet and thought again of the hot coffee. Morris was supposed to be here with him today, but the wife had put her foot down and told him if he didn't start up on some chores that he could live out in the shanty. The life of a married man, he thought, as he bounced the jig again. Morris could have all that. He enjoyed being able to just pick up and head out onto the lake to get some ice fishing in without going through all the red tape of a spouse. Maybe next week the two could reconvene. Another gust of wind rocked the tent. He threw a glance at the four walleyes laying on the ice near the hole. If things didn't pick up in another 10 minutes, he'd probably just pack it in. His ass was aching from sitting on the overturned plastic pail, and it would start getting dark in an hour. He particularly didn't want to be out on the ice in the dark trying to make his way back to the shore. As he stared at the dead fish and contemplated calling it a day, something caught his eye. He turned to the hole in the ice. For a moment, he thought he had seen a light from the water, a purplish light. He strained his eyes against the poor lighting within the tent and watched the hole. In one unforeseen movement, The jig had caught onto something so sudden and forceful that it snapped his line and was followed by an upheaval of the lake's water, causing it to push up from the hole and out onto the ice inside the shanty. It was as if something huge had moved beneath the ice under him and taken his jig with it. It was when the water subsided back into the hole that he saw the lights again. Bright purple lights from somewhere in the water's depths. It looked like a string of amethyst Christmas lights passing just under the surface.
"Hell's bells!"
Felix said aloud and crawled off the pail and onto his hands and knees in front of the opening. Water was still lapping at the frozen walls inside the ice hole. He could faintly see the lights as they moved serpentine-like in the water's darkness. They seemed within arm's length, and Felix quickly removed the glove on his hand and pushed up the sleeve to his parka the best he could. Despite the biting cold on his bare hand and forearm, he waited until the lights reappeared and in a closer proximity before he thrust them into the icy waters. His fingers brushed lightly upon something smooth and fleshy before it sank away from his touch. Instantly, the icy waters numbed his flesh, and as he was quickly retracting his arm, something latched onto the cold limb and pulled down hard. The force was strong enough to yank him from his knees and up to his shoulder into the hole. His face struck the ice as he fell, splitting his lip. The action had been so quick that he could not call out. His arm was aggressively twisted at an unnatural angle, and he heard a loud snap. His arm had now been released, and he scrambled back up onto his knees. It was then that he saw his arm was missing at the elbow. Blood was pouring out of the ragged wound and into the hole. He watched in horror at the torn sleeve and the nub of bone poking through. Because of the freezing water temperatures, pain did not come immediately, and just as he felt its onrush, something from the hole emerged, wrapped around his head, and pulled it into the hole. His body thrashed about on the surface, kicking over the pail and thermos, scattering the walleyes. There was another snap, and his flailing limbs suddenly ceased all movement. More bones began to crack and break apart, as something was slowly pulling his contorted, lifeless body through the 10-inch hole and into the lake's icy depths. The disarray inside the shanty showed clear signs that a struggle had taken place. The tent's furnishings were scattered about on the ice floor in a disheveled manner. Amongst the frozen walleyes, plastic bucket, and discarded pole were splashes of what he could only construe as blood. Dark patches of red where the liquid had seeped into the ice and froze solid. A single pack boot of beige and green laid near the hole. It too was speckled with red. Police Chief Ed Burns sighed and closed the flap to the tent.
"What you think, Chief?"
Sergeant Elliot Glover asked between sniffles.
"Looks to me like foul play."
Byrne gazed out across the 2 miles of frozen surface of Lake Malice. About 100 yards off to his left, a small group of a half dozen people had gathered on the snow-covered bank to observe the scene.
"Whoever was in here definitely had it out for someone. The question is, who were they?"
"I've got some of the boys asking around at the trailer park and some of the houses surrounding the lake area,"
Glover stated and followed the chief's gaze.
"Good. Once they take pictures of the scene and tag the stuff inside, I want a sample of that blood."
Burns' gaze now scanned the ice around the shanty.
"I don't see any sign of a struggle or blood outside the shanty, so I guess whatever started in there also ended in there. Anyone question these folks out here gawking at us?"
"Yeah, but no one knows a thing. Probably hanging around to get a glimpse of us taking a body out."
"If we had one," Byrne added. "I'm going to head back to the station, Elliot. Give me a shout if anything changes or you hear something else, okay?"
"You got it."
Behind the small gathering at the bank, an SUV from the township was pulling out of the wood line and into view.
"Crew's here,"
Byrne called over his shoulder to Glover as he carefully made his way across the ice. It was too early on a Monday morning to be solving a mystery or possible homicide. There should have been some signs outside the tent after a brawl like that. Something. Maybe the crew would pick up something that he hadn't initially seen. Once he was back on land, he made his way through the local spectators huddled up against the cold morning and greeted the crime scene crew as they emerged from their vehicle with their cases and gear. His own municipal SUV, a Ford Explorer, was off to the side, and as he neared, he took notice of something on his windshield. The closer he got, the clearer it became that a folded piece of paper had been placed between the wiper and the glass. Pulling the parchment free, he unfolded it. Only a single word was handwritten in black pen. He glanced back to the spectators only to see their attention was still drawn to the lake. No one was watching him. He scanned the tree line around him for someone who may be observing from a distance. No one. Folding the paper back, he shoved it into the pocket of his parka and climbed into his truck. As he swung the truck around and back onto the dirt road leading away from the lake into the paved road, Byrne glimpsed movement in the tree line. Someone in an olive drab army coat was taking a footpath from the shoreline and into the dense woods that surrounded the lake. He knew the trail. It cut into the trees for almost half a mile before leading back to the trailer park. He decided to cut the person off and wait for them as they emerged from the other end. Stepping on the accelerator, Byrne guided the Explorer down the road. His wait at the trail's entrance wasn't long before someone stepped out into the vacant lot where the trail began. He identified the person after only taking a few steps from the tree line. The man's name was Reuben Chemain. He lived here in the trailer park with his grandfather, both men descendants of the Chippewa tribes that once inhabited the state long before white men like himself came along. Reuben was in his early 40s, tall with long dark hair that moved about in the morning breeze. Byrne climbed from his truck as Reuben made his way closer.
Reuben!
He called to the man, whose gaze was fixed to the ground before him as he walked, his hands crammed into the pockets of his army coat.
Can I talk to you for a second?
Raising his head, Reuben slowed his pace as he met the approaching police chief.
Morning, Chief.
Byrne cut through the formalities and pulled the paper from his coat pocket.
Reuben, you put this on my windshield?
Unfolding the paper, he held the written word for him to see. Reuben stopped and peered at the paper, then to Byrne.
I did? But what is it? Why did you put it there? That's the answer to your crime, Chief.
Byrne turned the paper back and studied the word again, attempting to pronounce it.
Michiganebig. It's what's beneath the ice on that lake. Come again.
Reuben gestured with his head, his hand still in his coat, for Byrne to follow, and walked past the police chief and his vehicle.
Stop over at my place if you have a minute, Chief. We can talk there. I have some hot coffee on the stove, and you haven't seen my grandfather in a while.
Byrne watched as Reuben made his way out of the vacant lot and walked up the road to his trailer. He didn't know whether to stop the man or take him up on his request. A gust of cold wind blew into his face, causing a shivering wave to run up his body. Hot coffee sounded damn good.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Byrne sat at the small and unbalanced kitchen table inside Reuben's trailer. Despite it being late morning and sunny, the thin yellowed curtains remained closed in the trailer, giving it a gloomy atmosphere. Reuben pulled the kettle from the stove and poured the steaming water into a mug of instant coffee in front of Burn, and then to his own mug across the table.
"Milk? Sugar?"
asked Reuben as he set the kettle back on the stove.
"Black is fine, thank you."
Burn sipped the bitter coffee and looked across the trailer into the tiny living room area. The senior Shemaine, Ben, sat in an old walnut-colored polyester armchair that seemed to swallow up the small old man. Ben had to be well into his late 80s and resembled a frail brown mummy with a head full of long white hair. His undivided attention was being given to some show on a small television opposite him. The volume was well above the normal decibels.
How's your grandfather doing?
Ben inquired as Reuben took a seat at the table and added a few teaspoons of sugar into his own coffee.
He has his good days and bad ones. He mostly watches TV all day.
So, Byrne began and pulled the paper from his coat and set it on the table.
What's this name have to do with what went on out there on the lake? You know what happened?
Reuben grimaced as he sipped his coffee and tasted the sweet bitterness.
You remember last year when that kid fell in the ice out there?
Yeah, the Gordon kid. Him and his buddies were out there playing hockey on the lake, and he fell through the ice and drowned.
That's partially correct.
How so?
Everyone knows what those kids said when they were asked what happened out there.
You mean that something came up from under the water and pulled them in? Come on, Reuben. Those boys were scared shitless out there as they watched one of their own drown right in front of them. They couldn't help him because of fear of falling through themselves. That statement about something coming up from beneath the ice and pulling him under was just hysterics. One kid imagined some crazy alternative to his friend's drowning, and the others fell in line with it.
Reuben leaned across the table and tapped the unfolded paper with his finger.
That is an evil water spirit from ancient times, Chief. They live at the bottom of deep lakes, just like Malice, and feed on the flesh of men.
And for a moment I thought you actually knew something.
Burn folded the paper back up and crammed it into his coat pocket.
During the summer months, when the weather is warm, Reuben continued, despite Burn's comment, it sleeps at the bottom of the lake, but the cold awakens it, and that's when it feeds. Have you noticed that there are no incidents in the warm weather at the lake, only during the winter?
Burn finished his coffee and rose from his seat.
Reuben, I wish I could find this amusing, but I don't. There was a possible murder out there, and you invite me up here for Indian ghost stories. The Michiganebeg is no ghost story, and if you check your records, I'm sure you'll see that every year or two, someone goes missing or drowns out on that lake when it's frozen. Mark my words.
Ben donned his furred winter cap with ear flaps.
Thanks for the coffee, Reuben.
He then made his way to the front door and turned to wave at Ben Shemaine in his oversized chair and glued to an old rerun of Kojak.
Ben, take care of yourself. It was nice seeing you again.
In response, the old man turned his head in Burn's direction in a slow mechanical manner.
The serpent will take the shape of a man if it so wishes. To lure others to the water.
His voice was tired and crackled, yet loud and very audible over the competing volume of the television.
What?
Ben had said his piece and his gaze turned back to the ranting Telly Savalas as if he had said nothing.
What did he say?
Byrne turned his attention to Reuben.
Nothing that would interest you, Chief. Just some Indian ghost story.
Reuben's answer was laced with a hint of sarcasm.
A little advice, Reuben. Take your grandfather out for a walk once in a while. Get out of this trailer. Thanks again for the coffee.
And with that, Chief Byrne left the trailer. As soon as he walked into the station, Glover had slid from behind his desk and was at his side as he walked to his office.
"We got a possible ID on who was at the lake, Chief."
He handed Byrne a sheet of paper, which Byrne read as he walked. Glover was far from done speaking.
"Felix Schumer, 53, lives here in town, close to the lake. He was supposed to be out there with a friend, Richard Morris. The guy caught wind of what happened at the lake and went to check up on him. Schumer hasn't been home since yesterday morning from what we gathered from the neighbors."
Byrne dropped the paper on his desk as he entered his office and began to remove his coat.
"Why did you even give that to me if you were going to tell me everything anyway?"
Sorry.
Easing into his overly large office chair, he pulled the paper from the desk and leaned back deep.
"Elliot, do me a favor. Check the files. Go back 4 or 5 years. See how many incidents we've had at the lake and on what months they occurred. I want to know if the winter months contain more than the rest of the year."
"Why? You got a tip?"
Byrne sighed heavily and looked up over the report he held.
Maybe, but doubtful. Now get a jump on that, please."
When Glover exited, Byrne threw his feet up on the desk's worn wooden surface and scanned the report briefly before tossing it back onto the desk. As ridiculous of a notion as it was, he contemplated what he would do if Reuben's statement about the lake was true. Not that he believed in Indian spirits dragging men to their doom at the lake, but a more realistic speculation might point to some serial killer who was fixated with the lake during the winter. He moaned loud and long as he stretched his arms above his head. An Indian spirit would be more comforting, actually, than the latter thought. The rest of the week dragged by without incident, and it wasn't until after lunch on Friday when Glover showed up at his office door with the results of his assigned task.
"Finished up going through those files, Chief," he stated with a half smile as he held up a manila folder.
Leaning forward on his desk, Byrne held out his hand for the folder, but knew that the information inside would be made well known before he could even open it.
"Whatever hunt you were going on, Chief, was on point. There were a lot more incidents at the lake in the winter. They seemed to start up around the beginning of November and start to thin out around April. Everything from ice-related injuries to drunken disorderly, and quite a few drownings."
With the unopened folder still in his outstretched hand, Byrne simply stared at Glover for a moment before setting the information on the desk in front of him.
"Thank you. Now do you think I might be able to take a look at this?"
"Sorry."
Rolling his eyes, Byrne sighed and opened the folder. Glover had made copies of each incident report and even highlighted the dates. He began to separate the reports into different piles pertaining to the incident. He was even surprised at the few missing person reports.
"It's crazy how many people drown at that lake. I saw a few out-of-towners in there too," Glover said as he pointed to the paper stacks.
Byrne ran his fingers through his hair as he now started looking at the dates.
"It looks like there's a swell in drownings every other year."
He sat back and looked to Glover leaning inside the doorframe of his office.
"You remember that Gordon boy who drowned out there last year?"
"Of course, Ronnie Gordon."
"Yeah. Do you remember what his friends said in their initial statements?"
Glover thought for a second before answering with a snicker.
"Yeah. They said something about some sea monster grabbing the kid."
"Do you recall anyone else ever claiming to have seen something out there at the lake?"
"You mean like some lake monster?"
Glover laughed and looked over his shoulder to the main office of desks behind him before he turned his attention back to Byrne.
"You're not believing those kids, are you?"
"No, of course not. It's just that Reuben Shemaine said something to me today, that's all. He put that crazy idea of something in the lake in my head."
Glover laughed again.
"Reuben Shemaine? Come on, Chief. I've responded to a few calls on him and his grandfather. Those two are crazier than bedbugs."
Byrne wrinkled his brow and leaned back in his chair.
"Really? For what?"
"You really don't know?"
Glover playfully scoffed.
Reuben and his grandfather have a tendency to do these Indian rituals in their backyard at night.
Rituals?
Drums, dancing, chanting, bonfires, the whole works. The dispatch phone rings off the hook when they go at it, mostly when it's cold out.
Really?
Chief, why would I lie? Hey, is there anything else? I've got to get on the road in a few.
Byrne was still mentally digesting what he had just heard.
No, that's all. Take it easy.
Long after Glover had left, Byrne was still behind his desk, shuffling the newly acquired information around in his head. He lifted the reports from his desk and sifted through them. The preposterous idea of something in the lake being connected to missing people and drownings was by no means going to be taken into consideration. Yet, there was this thin string of possibilities connecting what was happening at Malice and the two men in the trailer park. As embarrassing as it would be, Byrne thought about paying another visit to Reuben's place and maybe hearing what the man had to say. He could almost laugh at the notion of going up there again, but something told him it was necessary. Shaking his head and smiling at his next move, Byrne rose from his chair and grabbed his coat off the rack behind his office door. What did he have to lose? It was just after 5 when Byrne entered the trailer park. Though the wind had finally subsided, the sky remained a blanket of overcast gray clouds that blotted out any rays of the setting sun that may have existed beyond them. At the trailer, he knocked on the decrepit screen door for a third time with no answer. Somewhere a few trailers down, a dog was barking at the sound of his knocking, but the Shemaine's place was silent. He tried leaning over to a window near the front door and glimpsed past the glass's dirt film and yellowed curtains within. He could partially see into the living room and at the back of the television and Ben's worn empty chair. Even the volume from the television was non-existent. Byrne turned from the door and scanned the trailers across the road from him and up and down the street. Perhaps Reuben had taken his suggestion and taken his grandfather out of the tiny confines of the trailer and out for a walk. As feasible as it sounded, he just couldn't visualize it. He was descending the steps of the small wooden porch when his handheld radio came to life.
Glover to Chief Byrne.
He responded into the speaker mic clipped to his coat.
Byrne here. Go ahead, Glover.
Where you at, Chief?
Up at Reuben Shemaine's place. Why? What's up?
There was a slight pause.
You might want to head up to the lake. Something you need to see.
What is it?
I'd rather not say over an open channel. Best if you see for yourself.
Okay, I'm en route.
Byrne dared not try to imagine what Glover had discovered up there. If there was another scene like Monday, he'd be drinking heavily tonight. As his truck rounded the final bend of the dirt road to the lake, he turned on his headlights. The thick gray clouds had brought the evening on sooner than it usually would. Glover's patrol car was parked near the shoreline. The vehicle appeared empty as the light from the Explorer's headlights washed over it. After a quick scan of the area, he keyed his speaker mic.
Glover, I'm at your car. Where are you at?
No response.
Glover, do you copy? I'm at the lake. What's your 20?
Nothing. Cutting the headlights, Byrne turned off the truck and climbed out into the chilled night air. Pulling out his mag light, he approached the patrol car and shined the light into the vehicle's interior. The car was as it appeared, empty. He surveyed the frozen lake and the silhouette of the wooded skyline of tall, dark aspens. The air was as silent as it was chilled. Something then caught his eye in the distance. A small glowing light seemed to grow and fade far out on the ice. He cursed under his breath and carefully found his footing on the frozen water and made his way out onto the lake toward the light, the beam of his flashlight playing back and forth in front of him. The further he went out onto the lake, the more he began to distinguish the characteristics of the light. It was some flickering flame that appeared to be behind the cloth. Probably inside an ice fishing tent, he guessed. The image of the shanty from Monday morning came into his mind, and the closer he got, the more he prepared himself for another crime scene. He was now about a few hundred feet from the light, and it revealed itself to be illuminating from within the tent. If not for the light, the shanty would have gone unseen in the darkness of night that had extinguished any visibility on the lake. Something suddenly moved between the light and the tent, causing a moment of pitch blackness. Byrne halted just in time to glimpse a silhouette glide past the light.
Glover?
The single question hung in the silent air. He placed his hand on the butt of his handgun and continued slowly advancing on the tent. He was now 30 feet from the portable shanty and noticed it as one that was larger than most. He guessed it could house 4 or 5 people. As he neared, the light, which resembled a gas lantern, was now bright enough to show the orange material of the tent's construction and the outline of the zippered flap entrance.
Anyone inside? It's Police Chief Byrne.
In response to his words, there was a loud splash of water from inside the shanty, as if someone or something heavy had dropped into the water. Taking his hand from his weapon, Byrne scurried to the tent and began working the flap's zipper. After a bit of difficulty undoing the zipper, the flap to the entrance of the tent fell inwards, giving him a view inside the shanty. To his left, a kerosene lamp was burning on full as it sat upon a wide upturned plastic bucket, similar to the one found in Felix Schumer's tent on Monday. Toward the back of the tent, a large hole was punched in the ice, or perhaps punched out. The 3-foot hole, because of its rough, uneven breaks, was obviously not done by an auger. The pound and blows from a sledgehammer or an axe, perhaps. Chunks of ice laid scattered about the edges of the hole. What was even more captivating of the scene inside was the amount of blood that had been splattered about the tent's interior. Splashes of the crimson fluid decorated the walls of the shanty and its icy floor like some splatter painting. Along with the gory design, strips of torn, blood-stained clothing were strewed about. Byrne took a step inside the tent and lifted a piece of shredded cloth. He didn't need to see much to determine that the torn material was from a police uniform. He dropped a strip of cloth and noticed Glover's duty belt was ripped in two and lying next to a severed arm at the pool's edge. The arm, like the rest of the scene, was covered in red.
Glover,
he said as he stepped farther into the tent and closer to the hole in the ice. Turning off his flashlight, he returned it to his duty belt and unholstered his 9mm. He stopped short of the hole's edge and leaned over, peering into the dark water inside. Gently floating on the chilled waters was the decapitated head of Reuben Shemaine. His lips parted, revealing the tightly clenched teeth behind them, his eyes wide and bulging. The head bobbed slightly, then turned to where it was now looking up at him, the long black hair fanned out in the water. As he gazed into the water, hypnotized by the head and numb to his surroundings, he recalled what old Ben Shemaine had said when he had left the trailer. The serpent will take the shape of a man if it so wishes, to lure others to the water. Had Elliot stumbled upon Ben and Reuben out here in the shanty, almost invisible to anyone from the shore and performing some Indian ritual? Was it insanely possible that Ben was what was living in the icy depths of the lake? The idea of a human killer stalking the town's lake was now being swept aside, making room for a deranged and new speculation to the lake's deadly incidents. How long had Reuben been keeping this secret and protecting his grandfather? What was the purpose behind their late-night ceremonial practices? The sound of the zipper being used and making the flap open even wider pulled him from his trance, and he whirled around, his weapon pointed at the entrance. It was Ben Shemaine. His coat was slashed and torn, his clothing and face showered in blood.
Bimi Batu!
He shouted, his eyes maniacally wide. It was then Byrne saw the long shaft of a tree branch clutched in his hands like a spear, the tip sharpened to a lethal point.
Ben, stop or...
Byrne yelled as he raised his gun, but Ben was already rushing into the tent with his spear leveled. Byrne squeezed off two quick rounds into the man's chest, sending him falling back out of the tent along with his spear. The sound of the gunshots were still ringing in his ears as he watched the old man begin to climb to his feet, using the spear as a crutch. The man was chanting as he rose. The images of Reuben's severed head bobbing in the water and Glover's torn duty belt flashed before him, and he fired two more rounds into the man. One struck his head and peeled the top of his skull off in a flash of red and gray matter. Ben fell heavily onto the ice and laid motionless. One leg was still inside the tent. Byrne found his breathing labored, and as reality flowed back to him, he lowered the gun and slid it back into the holster. He walked to where Ben was lying and looked down upon his steel form. When the thought of him not being human crept back into his head, he set his hand back on the butt of his sidearm, waiting for the old man to sit up once again. But it was not the unmoving body that now demanded his attention. It was the splash of water from behind him. He whirled again and faced a hole in the ice. Inching closer, he looked down into the hole only to see that Reuben's head was no longer floating about in the now choppy water. Something in the water had taken it. A bright object caught his eye, and he glimpsed a quick flash of lights beneath the ice. Taking a step back from the hole, he watched as a string of purple lights passed under the water inside the hole, followed by an upheaval of water that rose and filled the hole, then seeped out onto the ice. His hands trembled as he again pulled the 9mm from its holster. A shape was taking form beneath the water as it rose to the surface. Byrne took another step back and nearly stumbled over the severed arm. Rising from the water's depths was the naked form of a man with its head bowed. It rose as if it were being lifted by some unseen force. The body came up from the hole and stopped midway with its lower body still in the water. It lifted its head and faced Byrne, revealing itself.
Howdy, Chief,
spoke Glover. Water was running off his bare torso, his wet hair matted flat on his head.
Glover?
Byrne stammered.
Not quite.
Glover turned in the water to face the entrance of the shanty.
I see you took care of old Ben for me. For that, I thank you. The two of them were becoming quite a nuisance.
Byrne slipped on the mixture of blood and ice as he backed away and fell to one knee.
What's happening?
When you said that Reuben had been mentioning monsters in the lake to you, I knew he was getting desperate. I had to take them out of the equation.
Glover's head jerked to the ice as he noticed a severed arm near the rim of the hole. He smiled and reached for it. Byrne couldn't tell if his eyes were hallucinating and succumbing to this insanity, but it seemed as if Glover's arm grew and extended further than nature would allow as he lifted the arm and drew it near.
Excuse me a moment, Chief,
he politely said as he tilted his head back and opened his mouth. Byrne's eyes widened as his mind screamed that what was happening was no delusion. With his head tilted all the way back, Glover's mouth opened, and it continued opening. His jaw opened beyond its limits as both bone and flesh stretched past its capacity and then some. As his mouth enlarged, Long shark-like teeth were revealed as they too elongated. With his mouth open like some nightmarish pelican, he slid the arm down into the gaping maw, holding it by the wrist. His throat swelled as the limb slid down deeper until only a portion of the forearm was jutting from the toothy jaws. In a sudden movement, the teeth snapped shut on the limb like a bear trap, and then he began to slowly pull the limb back out. As he pulled the arm out, nothing but bone remained as the razor-sharp teeth peeled and scraped away the flesh. It reminded Byrne how one would eat a buffalo wing. In one forceful swallow, the flesh was sucked down its gullet, and the skeletal arm was tossed aside as the head and mouth contorted back into its original form. Byrne's hand shook uncontrollably as he raised the gun and fired. Two of the four shots missed completely, punching holes in the shanty's fabric walls. The two that found its target hit midsection, one in the upper pectoral and the other just below the sternum. Glover flinched as the rounds pierced his body. Gouts of a black oily fluid sprayed from the wounds. Glover casually looked down at the wounds inflicted and sighed.
"Yeah, that's not going to cut it, Chief. Weapons of iron forged by your white men are as ineffective as a tennis ball. Now, if you would have used a spear made from a branch of a basswood tree like old Ben was trying to do, that would have been a totally different story."
Glover began to rise higher from the hole, now exposing the inhuman portion of himself.
"Please."
Byrne whimpered as the last of his strength and courage was swiftly abandoning him. The gun slipped from his fingers as he slid to the ice floor. Glover tilted his head to the side as a dog might when observing something odd.
"Don't be scared. After you, Chief, I can keep going on. I will absorb, digest, and assume your body and sweep this whole mess under the rug. Get things back to normal now that those two Indians are gone. Those fucking ceremonies were holding me back from my true potential. They made it next to impossible to come up from beneath the ice."
Glover rose higher out of the hole. His lower portion thickened as it emerged. A body of smooth, shining gray flesh that resembled that of an octopus. Protruding from the larger lower section were long tentacles that pulled the body higher and stretched out across the ice. Fluorescent purple light shined on its monstrous body. Byrne attempted to scurry away like some frantic crab, but his footing was non-existent on the slippery ice, and soon the twisting, probing tentacles were wrapping themselves around his legs and pulling him across the ice toward Glover.
"Chief, I honestly wish I could say that this wasn't going to be extremely painful, but that would be an outright lie. There's no shame in screaming. No, sir. Glover screamed pretty good when it was his time."
Glover's grotesque imitation was now looming over him, the mouth opening wide again, the long shark teeth pushing out from the bleeding gums. More tentacles were holding him now and lifting him off the ice. Byrne closed his eyes against his fate and screamed long and loud.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie, and one thing I've learned is that you buy a house, but you make it a home. Because with every fix, update, and renovation, it becomes a little more your own. So you need all your jobs done well. For nearly 30 years, Angie has helped millions of homeowners hire skilled pros for the projects that matter, from plumbing to electrical, roof repair to deck upgrades. So leave it to the pros who will get your jobs done well. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com.
And that was Beneath the Ice by our old pal Frederick Pangborn. A good reminder to respect that indigenous knowledge. A little about the author. Old Frederick Pangborn was a short story author with over 100 stories to his credit and the majority of them in publication. He was a retired law enforcement officer and former U.S. Marine. And again, a special thanks to his brother Robert Pangborn, who's partnered with us to keep Frederick's legacy going. Robert himself is an amazing artist who we hope you'll check out. You can find him on Facebook at RF Pangborn. That's simply spelled P-A-N-G-B-O-R-N. Check out the show notes for a link to his Instagram. His paintings are genuinely horrifying. Thanks, Robert. And thanks, Fred. Gone but never forgotten.
And do old Drew Blood a favor, would you? Subscribe to his podcast wherever you do your listening and leave him a 5-star review and a kind word, even if you're listening on YouTube. He needs soldiers on all fronts to win this battle, and he appreciates it. To hear a premium ad-free edition of tonight's and all the other episodes, visit SimplyScaryPodcast.com today and click Patrons in the upper menu. You'll find yourself at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com, where you can become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to their entire audio archive, all ad-free and available to download or stream. Thank you for your time and for supporting our sponsors. When you support our sponsors, you support this show. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all the latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with them each and every week. Oh, and you can find Drew Blood on Facebook and Instagram, and sometimes Twitter. The Drew Blood's Dark Tales podcast is accepting submissions, friend. If you've got a story or two you'd like to be featured on the show, send it to drewbloodhorror@gmail.com. If selected, you'll get the full treatment, 10 bananas.
Well, I'm afraid this is where we part ways, at least till next week. So grab a drink for the road, friend. And if you run into any Wisconsin water demons out there, just tell them you know Paul J. McSorley. Always breaks the ice, so to speak. So may the wind be at your back and may the road rise up to meet you. Hit that like button on your way out, would you? Patreon.com/Drew Blood. Excuse me. Dry air this time of year, you know. And until next time, friends, go fuck yourselves. Good night, y'all.